But with that, I just want to unpack it again. And we're going to be in this a little bit, and you may get tired of me talking about it, but I want to go back to this Peter Drucker quote, because I think that's where it hangs, is that our culture, not our vision, not our footprint, and all those things are important, don't get me wrong, but if our culture doesn't represent that, then it doesn't make any difference what we do. And I can say that we are going to love God and love others, but if when people come in the door, we aren't attentive to the guest for the first time, then that's a problem. And the way people are today, and I know we will say, well, they just need to figure it out. Well, no, it's our responsibility, because Jesus, if we're hanging with him, the end result is the tension that's going to come in front of us in this. So a church can have the clearest vision, the most compelling mission statement. We can have it mounted and put it on our t-shirts and all that. But if we don't understand this idea of grace, and we've talked about this, and I'm coming at it in a whole different way, but the idea is if we don't give people the benefit of the doubt that they're walking through messiness. I mean, even last week, as we started our worship together, and as we leaned into the service, and when we got time to have prayer, it was clear that we're all bringing stuff to church. That in our brokenness and in who we are as human beings, that life is messy. And one of the reasons why we want to come to a place like this is because in this messiness, we find some kind of safety. And I think you may know this, but if you look at the church, if you look up at the ceiling, look up. You know how the original churches were built, what they were supposed to look like? It was the gospel ship. So if you just get a little creative with your mind, look up, and does this not look like the upside-down version of a boat? Think about it for a moment. Look at the side buttresses. I mean, there's an intentionality that the people who designed churches, the architects, they wanted to point us to the fact that actually in our communities, our churches ought to be the safest place on Sunday morning, on the rest of the week, literally every day, not just Sunday. Literally every day, the church ought to be a place where people can find refuge in the messiness of life. And like Matt said to us a couple weeks ago, there is a tension between whether or not, and you all demonstrated this morning, because the beauty of our children was they were giving you Valentine's Day cards and we were passing out chocolate, and as you sat down because you haven't seen each other in a week, you were having a conversation. Well, in some days, it used to be that when you entered that door, you didn't say a word. You were quiet because that's how you are respectful. Or I talked with a woman this week who called me, who I've known, Eleanor. She's actually been here a couple times. Eleanor called to say she's got some old Bibles that she found. What do I do with them? Because it's the Holy Bible. What do I do with them? They're falling apart. So it's like, I don't know. Is there a protocol? I know what the protocol is for the flag. There's a bin out in front of the Legion over on Ashland Road. So I know what to do. But it's like, you're right. So I did some research and found out. And what would you do? What do you think we should do with the Bible if it's worn out? Any ideas? Recycle it. Be green. It's a tree. I mean, there's nothing. Yes, it's God's holy word, but it's not anything holy about this. It's just a book. And the point is, you ought to wear it out. Now, the beautiful today is that the kids, some of us actually get out our phones, and we're on our phone because it's digital. So it's a whole different problem. And as I was talking with Eleanor, I can remember, and I think I've shared this story a couple times, like when I got my confirmation Bible, it's got my name on the front, and I can remember when Mr. Jones underlined it. It's like, what did you just do? But if you look at my Bible now that I study with in the morning, it's crazy. It's highlighted, and there's notes in the margin, and I actually just found these cool new pens that are erasable. Because I like to do it with colored pens, but it's erasable, so I can actually, whoops, if I made a mistake. But the idea is we're supposed to be in it. And so the idea of the culture we want to create, we want this to be a safe place. We want the safety that you've experienced over the many years of being a part of Linden Road, as many churches in our community, you want it to be a place when you come in. So that's why the whole check-in system for the kids, the whole background check of our adults. At the same time, we have to be healthy. And so the tension of, okay, check your heart pressure this afternoon, blood pressure when we get out of worship. But the question I want us to wrestle with, and the survey will help define a little bit of that you've gotten, but it's this next slide. What kind of culture did Jesus create for those who are far from God? Because the tension for us as Christ followers is really about connecting people to the story. That's really what we're called to do. We're not called to be comfortable and sit in the pew and just take in. We're not to be consumers. That's part of our problem culturally today, is that we're full of Americans for Americans, Westerners, who it's all about what is my experience, what is my expectation, what is my desires. And so I'm going to play with the survey a little bit to say that as you fill that out, not only what is your preference, but what do you think the preference ought to be as you answer those questions about people who ought to be coming to church? Now, I know what we want people to do, but if they're far from Jesus, what is it that we can do? And how can we stretch in that? And so I want to look at one story that we know well. I've used it a couple times, but I want to go back to it. And it's yeah, this story from the gospel. So if we can throw up Matthew chapter 9, Jesus says this. As Jesus went out on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting in the tax collector's booth. Okay, so stop for a second. What do we know about tax collectors? What's that? They were hated. Why were they hated? They worked for the Romans, exactly, and they were there to excise tax out of you. And it was not pretty. And so it's funny, there was a Super Bowl commercial for one of the used car dealers, or did you see this where the guy gets on the elevator and he goes down and it's like he finally get to the base level, and I think tax collectors are probably, if it was a friendship thing, there would be the last one. Like, who would want to be a friend of a tax collector? But I can tell you, I've actually had some friendships with a couple guys that work for the IRS, and they're not all that bad. They're actually there to help you. Believe it or not, they're not there to do anything other than what the law says, which is sort of surprising. But what does he say to him? What does Jesus say? Jesus says to the tax collector. And the thing that I wrestle with in Jesus' story is that this is the Son of God, and he knows everybody. And yet, and the amazing thing is, he picks people out to have relationships with that we learn about in the scriptures. He doesn't pick out the Pharisees to say, let's go and have coffee. No, he picks Matthew, the tax collector, and says what? Follow me, he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. And then where'd he go? While he was having dinner, okay? So we all know the power of the table, and in fact, the beauty of what I've experienced here at Linden Road over the last year, especially, the joy I've taken in hearing you all talk about small groups. I mean, Bill Crane is like, he's like the best marketer for our small groups. He keeps talking about the value of this, and everyone that comes to the Thursday afternoon study, he's pushing them to say, no, you need to be in a small group. And because it's in those circles that we have, whether you have food or not, doesn't matter. It's the idea of being in relationship with each other, because it can't happen here on Sunday morning. It can't happen with me here and you there. It just doesn't work. It's okay, but it's not what it needs to be. And so when we take the moments and we sit around the tables and we have the conversation, that's where it really, really gets important. And so he's at dinner, and he's at Matthew's house. Okay? Context. Think about this. He's having dinner with the tax collector. Jesus, the king of the universe, goes on to say, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. Okay, this is a party. This is a party of a bunch of tax collectors sitting in Matthew's house. Now, what do we know about Matthew? He's a tax collector. Okay, just to remind you, what is a tax collector? Good guy or bad guy? Bad, at least culturally, right? Culturally, he's bad. Now, Jesus, king of the universe, goes and sits with tax collectors. Are you feeling the weight of this? Are you feeling the tension in this? Okay, let's continue to go on. But what? When the Pharisees saw this, now, who are the Pharisees? Are they good guys or bad guys? They're supposed to be good. They are good. They are good people. They really are. They're amazing people who, in the scriptures we know, they are the religious leaders of the culture. Okay, you follow me? You tracking with me? But the culture is expecting things that Jesus is going to say, wait a minute, I'm going to teach you something. And so what does the Pharisees say? They come to the disciples and say, what? Read it with me. Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Stop there for a second. You're the disciples, you're hanging out with Jesus, and the Pharisees, the guys who are wearing the robes and who carry the weight within the culture, the religious culture, that they have a better relationship with God than you do, because that's why they're the Pharisees. They're more trained and more literate. Yet what? They're asking the disciples. And so what does Jesus say? On hearing this, Jesus says, read it with me, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Okay, let's stop and hang on there for there. Wait a minute. You just, again, thinking about the context. Who's sick? Why are we sick? Well, as we just finished this series on eternity, we're all sick in some sense. I mean, we're all broken. We're all sinful. But the beauty of what we offer our community is the gospel. There is hope. Now, part of what's driving this, and I just find how God, in the moment, I mean, Pat mentioned the word culture, but even this week, I was at the hospital with Faith Peretti, and there were 45 others in the faith community that were invited by Ohio Health to have lunch with Dr. Joseph Baca. Do any of you know Dr. Baca? He's the head of the ER. He's actually the medical director for the fire department. And this man is trying to lead a conversation with the faith community to say, we need you. We need you, folks, because we can't deal with what's going on in our community. And specifically, he's talking about the opioid epidemic. He says this to us. Churches, you have to step up and lean in. And to be honest, what then he said, now here's the problem with that. And so he actually says, you all need to show grace. So I'm sitting there going, okay, I'm taking notes because I'm talking about grace on Sunday a little bit. He says, no, grace has to be the first place that you all start. I'm going, okay, well, that's sort of the subtitle of this necessary. Grace comes first. But what is he saying? He's saying, look, here's the reality. Is the average person who is dealing with drug use, it will take them 7 relapses before they find help. Okay, yeah, I mean, it's just like, what do we as a community do with that? 7. And he says, that could be 7 years. So the question to the church, to you all, is what do you have the stomach for? And he's begging, pleading, that saying to the faith community that you all need to come because, and then I read you the scripture, and who does Jesus spend time with? Sinners, people who are sick. And so Friday, that happened on Thursday. So Friday I went to the jail as I normally do, and I said, a new young man showed up, and I said, so sit with Dr. Baca yesterday, and this doctor's telling me that it takes 7 times before you find help. And this man looks at me and says, well, I'm on my 6th. I'm on my 6th time of trying to find help. And I think I'm done with this stuff. And I said, are you? Let me push. Are you? Are you really done with this stuff? Because you've said it 6 other times. How do I know this is really? He says, no, I'm done with it. And he said, but at the same time, the problem I have, and I've heard this from so many men, and you change the address, whether it's Ashland County, Richland County, Crawford County, the reality is that what they will tell us is, I need somebody to walk and do life with me. Okay. But the tension with that is, do you have the stomach to walk with someone who's going to relapse 6 or 7 times? And then I was reminded about the weight that actually our first responders, Dan sort of represents in retirement now, but the beauty of what those men and women bring to it, of how, and I've actually asked Dr. Baca to come and spend a Sunday morning with us to have a conversation. He's going to do that in March. And so that should be a lot of interesting conversation, partly just to say, he's just trying to plead, look, I need your help. There is a community of sick people, and the only way we're going to, and for me, it really comes down to, not simply, but if I can help them see their relationship with Jesus, and more importantly, I'm only one person, but I see an army in front of me that if each of you in your own way, whether by praying for or being willing to spend time with people who are broken in our community, and I'm not saying it all has to be drug offenders, but the people that you need to figure out in your relationship piece, there's going to be a huge opportunity of us making a difference, a dent in the community. Now, let me just finish out the scripture. So he says what? It's not healthy. It's not the healthy who needs a doctor, but it's the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, Jesus says, for I have what? Not come to call the righteous, but the sinners. And so what Pat just demonstrated in sharing from her passion about our hearts and asking us to check in about our hearts, it's a thing we have to ask about our culture. You know, what is our culture here? And again, if we're trusting that it's not my desires, but it's God's desires, and that's why I go back to this idea of why you need to be reading your scriptures on a daily basis, why you need to be praying with Jesus and holding his hand, that if you do that, those questions will answer themselves. The questions that we're trying to wrestle through. And as I shared earlier, the beauty of what I find in our community, not just here, but in our faith community, is that we're all trying to figure this out. I was reminded that yesterday. And the beauty of that. And the beauty of that. And so I've given you a picture of Matthew. But see, I want us to see this. And so the next notes in your slide in your worship program is this, is that Jesus not only seeks out, but what? He hangs out with those who don't what? Obey, follow, or believe in him. And I know what our desire is as good Presbyterian folk, because we have the Book of Order that says, but you need to understand that people will want to belong before they believe. People want to know, in fact, John Maxwell, I think, the great Methodist pastor who does leadership stuff, he says, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You've heard that. And so whatever it is, whether it's the pots and pans or it's taking blood pressure, it's this idea of even the story of the husband and wife as he realizes his wife, you know, she realizes that, like, what am I going to do? And the husband turns a whole different role and says, no, I'm going to serve you. And so that ought to be the rallying cry for us as Linden Road, is that no, I know what my preferences are. But right now, there is a sick community that needs us. And so I'm sure Jane Frank could introduce us to some people at the court that need some more CASA volunteers. And that, how many times do the families relapse there? We could spend some time. Shake your head. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so the idea of how much are we willing to do that? How uncomfortable are we going to do? Because I promise you, by Jesus' demonstration and the way the picture that he paints is that he not only seeks these guys out, but then he goes spends time with them. And of all the things that we have beyond what we've got in the bank, our time is our most precious commodity, right? Because we only get it. And that's the one thing that all of us in the room share, is the number of hours we have in the day. And the question is, what do we do with those? And so for us as a church, we have to realize that people are going to want to belong in our community and be in relationship long before they decide to believe what we want them to believe. As much as I find strength in the great creeds and the great confessions of our faith, I don't know that my friends at the jail, specifically, if I took the Apostles' Creed in and said, let's just start reciting this, I'm not sure in the moment that they're going to really feel the beauty of what that can offer them. There's a time in relationship where I think I can get them to that point. Follow me? I mean, it isn't that I don't want to introduce them to that, but that's going to come out of relationship. And so part of what I've heard you all say, and where we're going to try to go over these next few weeks, is this idea, it's a concept called evangelism. And it's like, who wants to do that? But you're going to see the way Jesus did it was real simple. How did he do it? He sought people out, and then what did he do? He hung out with them. He went to where they were. Now, it's just amazing to me when you really drill down and just look at the character of Jesus as a human being. I mean, he was only on the face of this earth for 33 years. And it's amazing to me that he chose to do the things he did, because he could have done anything. And what I really wrestle with when I'm back in the book of the Gospel of John, especially, is because John pulls out just a handful of miraculous encounters that Jesus has with the people of the day. There are some people sitting at the pool of Bethesda who've wanted to be healed that he ignores. He picks this guy, but ignores the whole bunch of other folks that are sitting there. Okay, oh my goodness. I mean, it doesn't take too long. It's like, well, that's not fair. What about these people? No. And then we find that even in when Jesus is late to Lazarus' resurrection. And, you know, the verse you've heard me say so many times, the thing I love about Jesus is he's just like us, is that he wept, the shortest verse in the Bible, and knowing that he's going to resurrect, but at the same time he says, no, I can't do that because there's a reason for it. And so the idea is that everything that we're experiencing, even what we're experiencing as a church, part of the messiness is really a reflection of the culture we find ourselves in. And so our task is to figure out, how do we go out and hang out with those who don't obey, follow, or even believe in Jesus? Because I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. You're going to hear it a few more times. If you would, in whatever circumstance, just go do it for 30 days with your hands open and say, I'm just going to show up. Not having any details. And I know many of us need it mapped out for us. But the idea of hanging out with the Girl Scouts, of coming on Monday night and just showing up and being present and saying, I'm here. I'm here to greet dads and moms as they drop the kids off at the door. And it may be a little chaotic, and we're going to go into that in a moment. And then We're going to come back to this again over the next couple of weeks. So the Pharisees protest because they see this and they ask the question of Jesus, of his disciples, why are you hanging out with these people? And then Jesus tells us very clearly the reason is because people, I'm not here to hang out with the healthy, I'm here to hang out with the sick. And then it's amazing because, and we could spend a lot of time in this, but then Jesus chases the Pharisees and says, look, you missed this whole thing, of this thing of this religious thing that you're supposed to be doing. And it's there in Matthew chapter 23. He says what? Matthew, he says, next, I'm ahead of you here a couple more. Next one. Here we go. So woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, which is like, this is amazing. Jesus is actually saying, you do good things. You actually tithe. That's an amazing thing for you to do. But what is he going to say? But what? Read it with me. But you have neglected the important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You see, it's complicated and messy. And then finally, you should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, Jesus says. You strain out a gnat but swallow a camel. Okay, so I just want to go through this real quick, and then we're going to come back at it a couple times over the next few weeks. This idea of our practice. First of all, there's two sides to holiness. There's two sides to holiness. There's the part where we are the salt of the earth, but we're the light of the world. In other words, there's a relationship. We're rescued from hell. We're rescued from our sins, but it's for a purpose. So yes, we're made holy so we can stand and actually go into the Holy of Holies and have a relationship with Jesus, but it's not for anything other than us to be able to go back out into the community and do good work. That's really what it's all supposed to be about, is that we've been saved for a purpose. Or sometimes I like to write on people's notes when I'm sending them a card that you've been blessed to be a blessing. That actually the messiness of your life is a blessing to somebody else. And so be transparent in that. Lean into that. Now, you see, we're not just set apart from the world. We are also set apart for the world. And this idea of being holy is we make something holy, it means we set it apart. And so we've been set apart, but it's for a purpose so we can have a relationship. And here's where I want to land, just in a real practical way. So Paul Lintern, who many of you know, and a number of us other pastors have been working on this. And so there's a thing coming up in the month of March. It's called the March of Prayer. Kind of a play on words. But we've got 31 churches, big ones, little ones, and we own March 5th. And the idea is, and we'll put up a sign up for next week, is that part of it is there's going to be an event here that we need to shape in terms of a two-hour prayer encounter, and it can look like whatever we want it to look like, with some worship and those kinds of things creatively. And so if anyone has an interest in wanting to help shape that, we can talk after service. But then there's also going to be opportunities from Crossroads to St. Luke's to other churches throughout the community for us to go. And so part of what will be the sign-up next week, there's 31 days in March, is the idea of some of you going to other churches and supporting them, just like we need them to support us. And that the two points, and I'm going to come back to it again next week, is to keep going here, is that, first of all, we need to engage even though it's difficult. We need to engage even though our money is tight. We need to engage even though our attendance is, we're a small church. We need, that doesn't lessen the responsibility we have. And then the third point, and it's the one that I've said many times, but it's simply this. You need to expect that it's going to be messy. You need to expect that when you show up to help the Girl Scouts, it's going to be a problem. But it's also an opportunity. It's an opportunity for you and your gifting and your talents to maybe see it from a different direction, to come at it to offer something that might actually bring some joy. But also know that it may not be the way you want it. And that it's that messiness that we need to be okay with. Because you can see, again, if we go back and look at Jesus' character, where he went right into it. And just to tease it out over the next couple of weeks, one of the conversations I want to have is with Phil Holloway. I mean, Phil was apart from his family, serving people in a different place, in a different culture, if you will, on behalf of your all tax dollars to go and help people find the sense out of the mess. When you talk about the mess of a hurricane, I mean, that's a mess. And how do you find hope in that? And that's who the church is supposed to be. And so, you know, it means there's a cost to it, because Sheila has to put up with the absence of her husband, her best friend, but knowing that he's going to empower others to show up on behalf of them to say, no, let me help you clear away the mess and help you see that there's hope in here. To know that there are people who are going to rescue you and help come alongside you. And so with that, we just need to see there's this amazing opportunity that's in front of us all the time. And it comes back to that messiness in the sense that it's going to require more out of you. You're going to have to think about your schedule. You're going to have to think about your time and how you're going to lean into even maybe your treasures, because some of these things are going to cost us money. But that's God's money. And so he's just given you to be steward of it in a short time. And so with that, let me pray, and then let's respond with a hymn.